Sound by the oscillating frequencies blasting out from the station above him, but Miller made out enough to know where things stood. Holden had won, much as Miller had expected him to. The OPA was responding to 1,000 angry accusations from Earth and Mars, and, in the true and permanent style, factions within the OPA itself. It was too late. The Nauvoo was due in hours now. The end was coming. Miller put on his suit for the last time, turned out the lights, and crawled back up the airlock. For a long moment, the exterior release didn't respond, the safety lights glowing red, and he had a stab of fear that he would spend his last moments there, trapped in a tube like a torpedo ready to fire. But he cycled the lock's power, and it opened. The Eros feed was wordless now, with only a soft murmuring like water over stone. Miller walked out across the wide mouth of the docking bays. The sky above him turned, and the Nauvoo rose from the horizon like the sun. His splayed hand, held at full arm's length, wasn't big enough to cover the glow of its engines. He hung by his boots, watching the ship approach. The Phantom Julie watched with him. If he'd done the math right, the Nauvoo's impact site would be at the center of Eros's major axis. Miller would be able to see it when it happened, and the giddy excitement in his chest reminded him of being young. It would be a show. Oh, it would be something to see. He considered recording it. His suit would be able to make a simple visual file and stream the data out in real time. But no. This was his moment. His and Julie's. The rest of humanity could guess what it had been like if they cared. The massive glow of the Nauvoo filled a quarter of the sky now, and the full circle of it was free of the horizon. The Eros feed's soft murmur shifted to something more clearly synthetic, a rising, spiraling sound that reminded him for no particular reason of the green, sweeping radar screens of ancient films. There were voices at the back of it, but he couldn't make out the words or even the language. The great torch of the Nauvoo was a full half of the sky, the stars around it blotted out by the light of full burn. Miller's suit chirped a radiation warning, and he shut it off. A manned Nauvoo would never have sustained a burn like that. Even in the best couch, the thrust gravity would have pulped bones. He tried to guess how fast the ship would be going when it hit. Fast enough. That was all that mattered. Fast enough. There, in the center of the fiery bloom, Miller saw a dark spot, no more than the dot of a pencil's tip, the ship itself. He took a deep breath. When he closed his eyes, the light pressed red through his lids. When he opened them again, the Nauvoo had length, shape. It was a needle, an arrow. A missile. A fist rising from the depths. For the first time in memory, Miller felt awe. Eros shouted, "Don't you fucking touch me!" Slowly, the bloom of engine fire changed from a circle to an oval to a great feathery plume, the Nauvoo itself showing silver in rough profile. Miller gaped. The Nauvoo had missed. It had turned. It was right now, speeding past Eros and not into it. But he hadn't seen any kind of maneuvering rockets fire. And how would you turn something that big, moving that quickly, so abruptly, that it would veer off between one breath and the next without also tearing the ship apart. The acceleration G alone. Miller looked at the stars, as if there was some answer written in them. And to his surprise, there was. The sweep of the Milky Way, the infinite scattering of stars, were still there. But the angles had changed. The rotation of Eros had shifted, its relation to the plane of the ecliptic. For the Nauvoo to change course at the last minute without falling apart would have been impossible. And so, it hadn't happened. Eros was roughly 600 cubic kilometers. Before Protogen, it had housed the second largest active port in the belt. And, without so much as overcoming the grip of Miller's magnetic boots, Eros Station had dodged. Chapter 49. Holden.
Holy shit, said Amos in a flat voice. Jim, Naomi said to Holden's back, but he waved her off and opened a channel to Alex in the cockpit.
Alex, did we just see what my sensors say we saw?
Yeah, Cap, the pilot replied. Radar and scopes are both saying Eros jumped 200 clicks spinward in a little less than a minute.
Holy shit, Amos repeated in exactly the same emotionless tone.
The metallic bang of deck hatches opening and closing echoed through the ship, signaling Amos's approach up the crew ladder. Holden shook off the flush of irritation he felt at Amos's leaving his post. He'd deal with that later. He needed to be sure that the Rosinante and her crew hadn't just experienced a group hallucination.
Naomi, give me comms, he said.
Naomi turned around in her chair to face him, her face ashen.
How can you be so calm? She asked.
Panic won't help. We need to know what's going on before we can plan intelligently. Please transfer the comms to me.
Holy shit, Amos said as he climbed into the ops deck.
The deck hatch shut with a punctuating bang.
I don't remember ordering you to leave your post, sailor, Holden said.
Plan intelligently, Naomi said, like the words were in a foreign language that she almost understood. Plan intelligently. Amos threw himself at a chair hard enough that the cushioning gel grabbed him and kept him from bouncing off.
Eros is really fucking big, Amos said.
Plan intelligently, Naomi repeated, speaking to herself now.
I mean really fucking big, Amos said. Do you know how much energy it took to spin that rock up? I mean, it took years to do that shit.
Holden put his headset on to drown Amos and Naomi out and called up Alex again.
Alex, is Eros still changing velocity?
No, Cap, just sitting there like a rock.
Okay, Holden said. Amos and Naomi are vapor locked. How are you doing?
Not taking my hands off the stick while that bastard is anywhere in my space, that's for damn sure.
Thank God for military training, Holden thought.
Good, keep us at a constant distance of 5,000 clicks until I say otherwise. Let me know if it moves again, even an inch.
Roger that, Cap, said Alex.
Holden took off his headset and turned to face the rest of the crew. Amos was looking at the ceiling, ticking points off with his fingers, his eyes unfocused.
Don't really remember the mass of Eros off the top of my head, he was saying to no one in particular.
About 7,000 trillion kilos, Naomi replied, give or take. And the heat signature's up about 2 degrees.
Jesus, the mechanic said. I can't do that math in my head. That much mass coming up 2 degrees like that?
A lot, Holden said. So, let's move on. About 10 exajoules, Naomi said. That's just off the top of my head, but I'm not off by an order of magnitude or anything.
Amos whistled. 10 exajoules is like, what, a 2-gigaton fusion bomb?
It's about 100 kilos converted directly to energy, Naomi said. Her voice began to steady, which, of course, we couldn't do, but at least whatever they did wasn't magic. Holden's mind grabbed onto her words with an almost physical sensation. Naomi was, in fact, about the smartest person he knew. She had just spoken directly to the half-articulated fear he'd been harboring since Eros had jumped sideways. That this was magic. That the protomolecule didn't have to obey the laws of physics. Because if that was true, humans didn't stand a chance.
Explain, he said.
Well, she replied, tapping on her keypad. Heating Eros up didn't move it. So I assume that means it was waste heat from whatever it was they actually did.
And that means?
That entropy still exists. That they can't convert mass to energy with perfect efficiency. That their machines or processes or whatever they use to move 7,000 trillion kilos of rock wastes some energy. About a 2-gigaton bomb's worth of it.
Ah. You couldn't move Eros 200 kilometers with a 2-gigaton bomb, Amos said with a snort.
No, you couldn't, Naomi replied. This is just the leftovers. Heat byproduct. Their efficiency is still off the charts, but it isn't perfect, which means the laws of physics still hold, which means it isn't magic.
Might as well be, Amos said.
Naomi looked at Holden.
So, he started when Alex interrupted over the shipwide comm. Cap, Eros is moving again.
Follow it. Get me a course and speed as soon as you can, Holden said, turning back to his console.
Amos, get back down to engineering. If you leave it again without a direct order, I'll have the XO beat you to death with a pipe wrench.
The only reply was the hiss of the deck hatch opening and the bang as it closed behind the descending mechanic. Alex, Holden said, staring at the data stream the Rosinante was feeding him about Eros. Tell me something.
Sunward is all we know for sure,
Alex replied, his voice still calm and professional. When Holden had been in the military, he'd been officer track right from the start. He'd never been to military pilot school, but he knew that years of training had compartmentalized Alex's brain into two halves, piloting problems and, secondarily, everything else. Matching Eros and getting a course for it was the former. Extrasolar space aliens trying to destroy humanity wasn't a piloting issue, and could be safely ignored until he left the cockpit. He might have a nervous breakdown afterward, but until then, Alex would keep doing his job.
Drop back to 50,000 clicks and maintain a constant distance, Holden told him.
Huh, said Alex. Maintaining a constant distance might be tough, Cap. Eros just disappeared off the radar.
Holden felt his throat go tight.
Say again?
Eros just disappeared off the radar,
Alex was saying, but Holden was already punching up the sensor suite to check for himself. His telescopes showed the rock still moving on its new course toward the sun. Thermal imaging showed it as slightly warmer than space. The weird feed of voices and madness that had been leaking out of the station was still detectable, if faint. But radar said there was nothing there.
Magic, a small voice at the back of his mind said again.
No, not magic. Humans had stealth ships, too. It was just a matter of absorbing the radar's energy, rather than reflecting it. But suddenly, keeping the asteroid in visual range became all the more important. Eros had shown that it could move fast and maneuver wildly, and it was now invisible to radar. It was entirely possible that a mountain-sized rock could disappear completely. Gravity began to pile up as the Rosi chased Eros toward the sun. Naomi. She looked up at him. The fear was still in her eyes, but she was holding it together, for now. Jim? The calm, could you? The chagrin on her face was the most reassuring thing he'd seen in hours. She shifted control to his station, and he opened a connection request.
UNN Corvette, this is the Rocinante. Please respond.
Go ahead, Rocinante, the other ship said after half a minute of static.
Calling to confirm our sensor data, Holden said, then transmitted the data regarding Eros's movement. You guys seeing the same thing?
Another delay. This one longer.
Roger that, Rocinante. I know we were just about to shoot each other and all, but I think we're a little past that now, Holden said. Anyway, we're chasing the rock. If we lose sight of it, we might never find it again. Want to come with? Might be nice to have some backup if it decides to shoot at us or something.
Another delay. This one almost 2 minutes long. Then a different voice came on the line. Older. Female. And totally lacking the arrogance and anger of the young male voice he'd been dealing with so far.
Rocinante, this is Captain McBride of the UNN escort vessel Ravi.
Ah, thought Holden. I've been talking to the first officer all along. The captain finally took the horn. That might be a good sign.
I've sent word to Fleet Command, but it's a 23-minute lag right now, and that rock's putting on speed. You have a plan?
Not really, Ravi. Just follow and gather intel until we find an opportunity to do something that makes a difference. But if you came along, maybe none of your people will shoot at us accidentally while we figure it out.
There was a long pause.
Holden knew that the captain of the Ravi was weighing the chance that he was telling the truth against the threat he'd made against their science vessel. What if he was in on whatever was happening? He'd be wondering the same thing in their position.
Look, he said, I've told you my name, James Holden. I served as a lieutenant in the UNN. My record should be on file. It'll show a dishonorable discharge, but they'll also show that my family lives in Montana. I don't want that rock to hit Earth any more than you do.
The silence on the other end continued for another few minutes.
Captain, she said, I believe my superiors would want me to keep an eye on you. We'll be coming along for the ride while the brains figure this out.
Holden let out a long, noisy exhale.
Thanks for that, McBride. Keep trying to get your people on the line. I'm going to make a few calls myself. Two corvettes are not going to fix this problem.
Roger that. The Ravi replied, then killed the connection.
I've opened a connection with Tycho, Naomi said.
Holden leaned back in his chair, the mounting gravity of their acceleration pressing against him. A watery lump was gathering low in his gut, the loose knot telling him that he had no idea what he was doing, that all the best plans had failed, and that the end was near. The brief hope he'd felt was already starting to slip away.
How can you be so calm?
I think I'm watching the end of the human race, Holden thought. I'm calling Fred, so that it isn't my fault when no one has an idea how to stop it. Of course I'm not calm. I'm just spreading the guilt, he thought.
How fast? Fred Johnson asked incredulously. 4 G's now, and climbing, Holden replied, his voice thick as his throat compressed. Oh, and it's invisible to radar now.
4 G. Do you know how heavy Eros is?
There's been some discussion, Holden said, only the acceleration keeping his impatience from showing in his voice. The question is, now what? The Nauvoo missed. Our plans are shot to shit.
There was another perceptible increase in pressure as Alex sped the ship up to keep up with Eros. A little while longer, and speech wouldn't be possible.
"It's definitely headed for Earth?" Fred asked. "Alex and Naomi are 90% or so. Hard to be totally accurate when we can only use visual data. But I trust them. I'd go to where there are 30 billion new hosts, too."
30 billion new hosts, 8 of whom were his parents. He imagined Father Tom as a bundle of tubes oozing brown goo. Mother Elise as a ribcage dragging itself across the floor with one skeletal arm. And with that much biomass, what could it do then? Move Earth? Turn out the sun?
"Have to warn them," Holden said, trying not to strangle on his own tongue as he spoke. "You don't think they know?"
"They see a threat. They may not see the end of all native life in the solar system," Holden said.
"You wanted a reason to sit at the table? How about this one? Come together or die."
Fred was quiet for a moment. Background radiation spoke to Holden in mystic whispers full of dire portents while he waited.
"Newcomer," it said.
"Hang around for 14 billion years or so. See what I've seen. Then all this nonsense won't seem so important."
"I'll see what I can do," Fred said, interrupting the universe's lecture on transience. "In the meantime, what are you going to do?"
"Get outrun by a rock, and then watch the cradle of humanity die," Holden thought.
"I'm open to suggestions," Holden said. "Maybe you could detonate some of the surface nukes the demo team put down. Deflect Eros's course. Buy us time.
They're on proximity fuses. Can't set them off," Holden said. The last word turning into a yelp as his chair stabbed him in a dozen different places and injected him full of fire. Alex had hit them with the juice, which meant Eros was still speeding up, and he was worried they'd all black out. How fast was it going to go? Even on the juice, they couldn't sustain prolonged acceleration past 7 or 8 G without serious risk. If Eros kept this rate of increase up, it would outrun them.
"You can remote detonate," Fred said. "Miller will have the codes. Have the demo team calculate which ones to set off for maximum effect."
"Roger that," Holden said. "I'll give Miller a call."
"I'll work on the inners," Fred said, using the Belcher slang without a hint of self-consciousness. "See what I can do."
Holden broke the connection, then linked up to Miller's ship.
"Yo," said whoever was manning the radio there.
"This is Holden on the Rosinante. Give me Miller."
Said the voice. "Okay."
There was a click, then static, then Miller saying hello with a faint echo. Still wearing his helmet then.
"Miller, this is Holden. We need to talk about what just happened.
Eros moved."
Miller sounded strange, his voice distant, as though he was only barely paying attention to the conversation. Holden felt a flush of irritation, but tamped it back down. He needed Miller right now, whether he wanted to or not.
"Look," he said, "I've talked to Fred, and he wants us to coordinate with your demo guys. You've got remote codes. If we set off all of them on one side, we can deflect its course.
Get your techs on the line, and we'll work it out."
"Huh, yeah. That sounds like a good idea. I'll send the codes along," said Miller,
his voice no longer distant, but holding back a laugh, like a man about to tell the punchline of a really good joke.
"But I can't really help you with the techs."
"Shit, Miller, you pissed those people off too?"
Miller did laugh now, a free, soft sound that someone who wasn't piling on G could afford. If there was a punchline, Holden had missed it.
Yeah, Miller said. Probably. But that's not why I can't get them for you. I'm not on the ship with them.
What?
I'm still on Eros.
Chapter 50. Miller. What do you mean you're on Eros? Holden said.
Pretty much that, Miller said, covering his growing sense of shame with a casual tone of voice. Hanging upside down outside the tertiary docks where we moored one of the ships. Feel like a freaking bat. But funny thing, too, I didn't feel it when the thing moved. You'd think accelerating like that, it would have thrown me off or squashed me flat, one or the other. But there was nothing.
Okay, hold on, we're coming to get you.
Holden, Miller said. Just stop it, all right?
The silence didn't last more than a dozen seconds, but it carried a wealth of meaning.
It's not safe to bring the Rosinante to Eros, and I came here to die, and don't make this harder than it is.
Yeah, I just, Holden said, and then,
okay, let me coordinate with the technicians. I'll let you know what they say.
One thing, though, Miller said.
You're talking about deflecting this son of a bitch?
Just keep in mind, it's not a rock anymore. It's a ship.
Right, Holden said, and a moment later, okay. The connection dropped with a tick. Miller checked his oxygen supply. 3 hours in suit, but he could head back to his little ship and refill it well before that. So, Eros was moving, was it? He still didn't feel it, but watching the curved surface of the asteroid, he could see micro-asteroids, all coming from the same direction, bouncing off. If the station kept accelerating, they'd start coming more often, more powerfully. He'd need to stay in the ship. He turned his hand terminal back to the Eros feed. The station beneath him was chirping and muttering. Long, slow vowel sounds radiating out from it like recorded whale song. After the angry words and static, the voice of Eros sounded peaceful. He wondered what kind of music Diogo's friends would be making out of this. Slow dancing didn't seem like their style. An annoying itch settled in the small of his back, and he shifted in his suit, trying to rub it away. Almost without his noticing it, he grinned, and then laughed. A wave of euphoria passed into him. There was alien life in the universe, and he was riding on it, like a tick on a dog. Eros Station had moved of its own free will, and by mechanisms he couldn't begin to imagine. He didn't know how many years it had been since he'd been overwhelmed by awe. He'd forgotten the feeling. He raised his arms to his sides, reaching out as if he could embrace the endless dark vacuum below him. Then, with a sigh, he turned back toward the ship. Back in the protective shell, he took off the vac suit and hooked the air supply to the recyclers to charge up. With only one person to care for, even low-level life support would have it ready to go within the hour. The ship batteries were still almost fully charged. His hand terminal chimed twice, reminding him that it was once again time for the anti-cancer meds. The ones he'd earned the last time he'd been on Eros. The ones he'd be on for the rest of his life. Good joke. The fusion bombs were in the ship's cargo hold, gray, square boxes about half again as long as they were tall, like bricks in a mortar of pink adhesive foam. It took Miller 20 minutes of searching through storage lockers to find a can of solvent that still had charge in it. The thin spray from it smelled like ozone and oil, and the stiff pink foam melted under it. Miller squatted beside the bombs and ate a ration bar that tasted convincingly like apples. Julie sat beside him, her head resting weightlessly on his shoulder. There had been a few times that Miller had flirted with Faith. Most had been when he was young and trying out everything. Then, when he was older, wiser, more worn, and in the crushing pain of the divorce, he understood the longing for a greater being, a huge and compassionate intelligence that could see everything from a perspective that dissolved the pettiness and evil and made everything all right. He still felt that longing. He just couldn't convince himself it was true. And still, maybe there was something like a plan. Maybe the universe had put him in the right place at the right time to do the thing that no one else would do. Maybe all the pain and suffering he'd been through, all the disappointments and soul-crushing years wallowing through the worst that humanity had to offer up, had been meant to bring him here, to this moment, when he was ready to die, if it bought humanity a little time. "It would be pretty to think so," Julie said in his mind.
"It would," he agreed with a sigh.
At the sound of his voice, the vision of her vanished, just another daydream. The bombs were heavier than he'd remembered. Under a full G, he wouldn't have been able to move them. At only 1/3, it was a struggle, but possible. An agonizing centimeter at a time, he dragged one of them onto a handcart and hauled it to the airlock. Eros above him sang to itself. He had to rest before he tackled the hard work. The airlock was thin enough that only the bomb or he could fit through at a time. He climbed on top of it, took it out the outer airlock door, then had to lift the bomb out with straps he rigged from cargo netting. And once out, it had to be tethered to the ship with magnetic clamps to keep Eros's spin from sliding it out into the void. After he'd pulled it out and strapped it to the cart, he stopped to rest for half an hour. There were more impacts now, a rough sign that Eros was indeed accelerating. Each one a rifle shot, capable of bouncing clean through him or the ship behind him, if bad luck sent it in the right direction. But the odds were low of one of the occasional rocks lining up a killing shot with his tiny, ant-like figure crawling across the surface. Once Eros cleared the belt, they'd stop anyway. Was Eros leaving the belt? He realized he had no idea where Eros was going. He'd assumed it was Earth. Holden would know by now, probably. His shoulders ached a little from his efforts, but not badly. He worried that he'd overloaded the cart. Its wheels were stronger than his mag boots, but they could still be overcome. The asteroid above him lurched once, a new and unsettling motion that didn't repeat. His hand terminal cut off the Eros feed, alerting him that he had an incoming connection. He looked at it, shrugged, and let the call come through.
"Naomi," he said before she could speak. "Have you been doing?"
"Hey," she said. The silence between them stretched.
"You talked to Holden then?"
"I did," she said. "He's still talking about ways to get you off that thing."
"He's a good guy," Miller said. "Talk him out of it for me, okay?"
The silence hung long enough that Miller started to get uncomfortable.
"What are you doing there?"
she asked, as if there were an answer for that.
As if all his life could be summarized in answer to one simple question.
He danced around what she meant and replied only to what she'd said.
Well, I've got a nuclear bomb strapped to a cargo wagon. I'm hauling it over to the access hatch and taking it into the station.
Miller, the thing is, we were treating this like a rock.
Now everyone knows that's a little simplistic, but it's going to take people time to adjust. Navies are still going to be thinking of this thing like a billiard ball when it's really a rat.
He was talking too fast, the words spilling out of him in a rush. If he didn't give her room, she wouldn't talk. He wouldn't have to hear what she had to say. He wouldn't have to keep her from talking him down.
It's going to have structure, engines or control centers, something. If I truck this thing inside, get it close to whatever coordinates the thing, I can break it, turn it back into a billiard ball. Even if it's just for a little while, that gives the rest of you a chance.
I figured, she said. It makes sense. It's the right thing to do.
Miller chuckled. A particularly solid impact talked against the ship beneath him, the vibration of it jarring his bones. Gas started venting out of the new hole. The station was moving faster.
Yeah, he said.
Well, I was talking to Amos, she said. You need a dead man switch, so that if something happens, the bomb still goes off. If you have the access codes...
I do.
Good. I've got a routine you can put on your hand terminal. You'll need to keep your finger on the select button. If you go away for 5 seconds, it sends the go signal. If you want, I can upload it to you.
So I have to wander around the station with my finger mashed on a button?
Naomi's tone made it an apology. They might take you out with a headshot, or wrestle you down. The longer the gap, the more chance for the protomolecule to disable the bomb before it goes off. If you need more, I can reprogram it.
Miller looked at the bomb resting on its cart just outside the ship's airlock. Its readouts all glowed green and gold. His sigh briefly fogged the inside of his helmet.
Yeah, no, 5 is good. Upload the routine. Am I going to need to tweak it, or is there a simple place I can put the arm and fire string?
There's a setup section, Naomi said. It prompts you. The hand terminal chirped, announcing the new file. Miller accepted it, ran it. It was easy as keying in a door code. Somehow he felt that arming fusion bombs to detonate around him should have been more difficult.
Got it, he said. We're good to go. I mean, I still have to move this bastard, but other than that, how fast am I accelerating on this thing anyway?
Eventually, it will be faster than the Rossi can go. 4G and ramping up with no sign of easing off the throttle.
Can't feel it at all, he said.
I'm sorry about before, Naomi said.
It was a bad situation. We did what we had to do. Same as always.
Same as always, she echoed. They didn't speak for a few seconds.
Thanks for the trigger, Miller said. Tell Amos I appreciate it.
He cut the connection before she could answer. Long goodbyes weren't anyone's strong suit. The bomb rested in the handcart. Magnetic clamps in place, and a wide woven steel belt around the whole mess. He moved slowly across the metallic surface of the port docks. If the cart lost its grip on Eros, he wouldn't be strong enough to hold it back. Of course, if one of the increasingly frequent strikes hit him, it would be a lot like getting shot. So waiting around wasn't a good solve either. He put both dangers out of his mind and did the work. For 10 nervous minutes, his suit smelled of overheating plastic. All the diagnostics showed within the error bars, and by the time the recyclers cleared it, his air supply still looked good. Another little mystery he wasn't going to solve. The abyss above him shone with unflickering stars. One of the dots of light was Earth. He didn't know which one. The service hatch had been tucked in a natural outcropping of stone, the raw ferrous cart track like a ribbon of silver in the darkness. Grunting, Miller hauled the cart and the bomb and his own exhausted body up around the curve, and spin gravity once again pressed down on his feet instead of stretching his knees and spine. Light-headed, he keyed in the codes until the hatch opened. Eros lay before him, darker than the empty sky. He ran the hand terminal connection through the suit, calling Holden for what he expected was the last time. "Miller," Holden said almost immediately.
"I'm heading in now," he said.
"Wait, look, there's a way we might be able to get an automated cart. If the Rossi..."
"Yeah, but you know how it is. I'm already here. And we don't know how fast this son of a bitch can go. We've got a problem we need to fix. This is how we do it."
Holden's hope had been weak anyway. Pro forma. A gesture, and, Miller thought, maybe even heartfelt. Trying to save everyone. Right to the last. "I understand," Holden finally said.
"Okay, so once I've broken whatever the hell I find in there..."
"We're working on ways to annihilate the station."
"Good. I'd hate to go through the trouble for nothing."
Is there anything you want me to do? After?"
"Nah," Miller said.
And then Julie was at his side, her hair floating around her like they were underwater. She glowed in more starlight than was actually there.
"Wait, yes, a couple things. Julie's parents, they run Mao Kwiatkowski Mercantile. They knew the war was going to start before it did. They've got to have links to Protogen. Make sure they don't get away with it. And if you see them, tell them I'm sorry I didn't find her in time."
"Right," Holden said. Miller squatted in the darkness. Was there anything else? Shouldn't there be more? A message to Havelock, maybe? Or Mus? Or Diogo and his OPA friends? But then there would have to be something to say.
"Okay," Miller said. "That's it then. It was good working with you."
"I'm sorry it came down this way," Holden said. It wasn't an apology for what he'd done or said, for what he'd chosen and refused.
"Yeah," Miller said. "But what can you do, right?"
It was as close to goodbye as either of them could get. Miller shut the connection, brought up the script Naomi had sent him, and enabled it. While he was at it, he turned the Eros feed back on. A soft, hushing sound, like fingernails scratching down an endless sheet of paper. He turned on the cart's lights, the dark entrance of Eros brightening to industrial gray, shadows scattering to the corners. He imagined Julie stood in the glare, like it was a spotlight, the glow illuminating her and all the structures behind her at the same time, the remnant of a long dream, almost over. He took off the brakes, pushed, and went inside Eros, for the last time. Chapter 51. Holden. Holden knew that humans could tolerate extremely high G-forces over short durations. With proper safety systems, professional daredevils had sustained impacts in excess of 25 Gs and survived. The human body deformed naturally, absorbed energy in soft tissues, and diffused impacts across larger areas. He also knew that the problem with extended exposure to high G was that the constant pressure on the circulatory system would begin exposing weaknesses. Have a weak spot in an artery that could turn into an aneurysm in 40 years? A few hours at 7G might just pop it open now. Capillaries in the eyes started to leak. The eye itself deformed, sometimes causing permanent damage. And then there were the hollow spaces, like the lungs and digestive tract. You piled on enough gravity, and they collapsed. And while combat ships might maneuver at very high G for short durations, every moment spent under thrust multiplied the danger. Eros didn't need to shoot anything at them. It could just keep speeding up until their bodies exploded under the pressure. His console was showing 5G, but even as he watched, it shifted to 6. They couldn't keep this up. Eros was going to get away. There was nothing he could do about it. But he still didn't order Alex to stop accelerating. As if Naomi were reading his mind, "We can't keep this up," popped up in his console, her user ID in front of the text. "Fred's working on it. They might need us to be within range of Eros when they come up with a plan," he replied. Even moving his fingers the millimeters necessary to use the controls built into his chair for exactly this reason was painfully difficult. "Within range for what?" Naomi typed. Holden didn't answer. He had no idea. His blood was burning with drugs to keep him awake and alert, even while his body was being crushed. The drugs had the contradictory effect of making his brain run at double speed while not allowing him to actually think. But Fred would come up with something. Lots of smart people were thinking about it. And Miller. Miller was lugging a fusion bomb through Eros right now. When your enemy had the tech advantage, you came at him as low tech as you could get. Maybe one sad detective pulling a nuclear weapon on a wagon would slip through their defenses. Naomi had said they weren't magic. Maybe Miller could make it and give them the opening they needed. Either way, Holden had to be there, even if it was just to see. "Fred," Naomi typed to him. Holden opened the connection. Fred looked to him like a man suppressing a grin.
"Holden," he said. "How are you guys holding up?"
6 G's. Spit it out.
"Right. So it turns out that the UN cops have been ripping Protogen's network apart, looking for clues as to what the hell's been going on. Guess who showed up as public enemy number one for the Protogen bigwigs? Yours truly. Suddenly, all is forgiven, and Earth welcomes me back into her warm embrace. The enemy of my enemy thinks I'm a righteous bastard.
Goody. My spleen is collapsing. Hurry up."
"The idea of Eros crashing into Earth is bad enough. Extinction-level event, even if it's just a rock. But the UN people have been watching the Eros feeds, and it's scaring the shit out of them."
"And?"
"Earth is preparing to launch her entire ground-based nuclear arsenal. Thousands of nukes. They're going to vaporize that rock. The Navy will intercept what's left after the initial attack and sterilize that entire area of space with constant nuclear bombardment. I know it's a risk, but it's what we have."
Holden resisted the urge to shake his head. He didn't want to wind up with one cheek stuck to the chair permanently.
"Eros dodged the Nauvoo. It's going 6 G's right now. And according to Naomi, Miller feels no acceleration. Whatever it's doing, it doesn't have the same inertial limitations we have. What's to stop it from just dodging again? At these speeds, the missiles will never be able to turn around and catch it. And what the hell are you targeting on? Eros doesn't reflect radar anymore."
"That's where you come in. We need you to try bouncing a laser off of it. We can use the Rosinante's targeting system to guide the missiles in.
I hate to break it to you,
but we'll be out of this game long before those missiles show. We can't keep up. We can't guide the missiles in for you. And once we lose visual, no one will be able to track where Eros is.
You might have to put it on autopilot, Fred said, meaning you might all have to die in the seats you're in right now.
I've always wanted to die a martyr and all, but what makes you think the Rossi can beat this thing on its own? I'm not killing my crew because you can't come up with a good plan.
Fred leaned toward the screen, his eyes narrowing. For the first time, Fred's mask slipped, and Holden saw the fear and helplessness behind it.
Look, I know what I'm asking, but you know the stakes. This is what we have. I didn't call you to hear how it won't work. Either help or give up. Right now, Devil's Advocate is just another name for asshole.
Holden thought, I'm crushing myself to death, probably doing permanent damage just because I wouldn't give up, you bastard. So sorry I didn't sign my crew up to die the minute you said to do it. Having to type everything out had the advantage of restraining emotional outbursts. Instead of ripping into Fred for questioning his commitment, Holden just typed, "Let me think about it," and cut the connection. The optical tracking system watching Eros flashed a warning to him that the asteroid was increasing speed again. The giant sitting on his chest added a few pounds as Alex pushed the Rosinante to keep up. A flashing red indicator informed Holden that because of the duration they'd spent at the current acceleration, he could expect as much as 12% of the crew to stroke out. It would go up. Enough time, and it would reach 100%. He tried to remember the Rossi's maximum theoretical acceleration. Alex had already flown it at 12G briefly when they'd left the Doniger. The actual limit was one of those trivial numbers, a way to brag about something your ship would never really do. 15G, was it? 20? Miller hadn't felt any acceleration at all. How fast could you go if you didn't even feel it? Almost without realizing he was going to do it, Holden activated the master engine cutoff switch. Within seconds, he was in freefall, racked with coughs as his organs tried to find their original resting places inside his body. When Holden had recovered enough to take one really deep breath, his first in hours, Alex came on the comm.
Cap, did you kill the engines? The pilot said.
Yeah, that was me. We're done. Eros is getting away no matter what we do. We were just prolonging the inevitable, and risking some crew deaths in the process.
Naomi turned her chair and gave him a sad little smile. She was sporting a black eye from the acceleration.
We did our best, she said.
Holden shoved out of his chair hard enough that he bruised his forearms on the ceiling, then shoved off hard again and pinned his back to a bulkhead by grabbing onto a fire extinguisher mount. Naomi was watching him from across the deck, her mouth a comical O of surprise. He knew he probably looked ridiculous, like a petulant child throwing a tantrum, but he couldn't stop himself. He broke free of his grip on the fire extinguisher and floated into the middle of the deck. He hadn't known he'd been pounding on the bulkhead with his other fist. Now that he did, his hand hurt.
God damn it, he said. Just God damn it.
Naomi started, but he cut her off.
We did our best? What the hell does that matter?
Holden felt a red haze in his mind, and not all of it was from the drugs.
I did my best to help the Canterbury, too. I tried to do the right thing when I let us be taken by the Doniger. Did my good intentions mean jack shit?
Naomi's expression went flat. Now her eyelids dropped, and she stared at him from narrow slits.
her lips pressed together until they were almost white. They wanted me to kill you, Holden thought. They wanted me to kill my crew just in case Eros can't break 15G, and I couldn't do it. The guilt and rage and sorrow played against each other, turning into something thin and unfamiliar. He couldn't put a name to the feeling. You're the last person I'd expect to hear self-pity from, she said, her voice tight. Where's the captain who's always asking, what can we do right now to make things better? Holden gestured around himself helplessly. Show me which button to push to stop everyone on Earth from being killed, I'll push it. Just as long as it doesn't kill you, he thought. Naomi unbuckled her harness and floated toward the crew ladder. I'm going below to check on Amos, she said, then opened the deck hatch. She paused. I'm your operations officer, Holden. Monitoring communication lines is part of the job. I know what Fred wanted. Holden blinked, and Naomi pulled herself out of sight. The hatch slammed behind her with a bang that couldn't have been any harder than normal, but felt like it was anyway. Holden called up to the cockpit and told Alex to take a break and get some coffee. The pilot stopped on his way through the deck, looking like he wanted to talk, but Holden just waved him on. Alex shrugged and left. The watery feeling in his gut had taken root and bloomed into a full-fledged, limb-shaking panic. Some vicious, vindictive, self-flagellating part of his mind insisted on running non-stop movies of Eros hurtling toward Earth. It would come screaming down out of the sky, like every religion's vision of apocalypse made real. Fire and earthquakes and pestilential rain sweeping the land. But each time Eros hit the Earth in his mind, it was the explosion of the Canterbury he saw. A shockingly sudden white light, and then nothing but the sound of ice pebbles rattling across his hull like gentle hail. Mars would survive, for a while. Pockets of the belt would hold out even longer, probably. They had a culture of making do, surviving on scraps, living on the bleeding edge of their resources. But in the end, without Earth, everything would eventually die. Humans had been out of the gravity well a long time, long enough to have developed the technology to cut that umbilical cord. But they just never bothered to do it. Stagnant. Humanity, for all its desire to fling itself into every livable pocket it could reach, had become stagnant. Satisfied to fly around in ships built half a century before, using technology that hadn't changed in longer than that. Earth had been so focused on her own problems that she'd ignored her far-flung children, except when asking for her share of their labors. Mars had bent her entire population to the task of remaking the planet, changing its red face to green, trying to make a new Earth to end their reliance on the old. And the belt had become the slums of the solar system, everyone too busy trying to survive to spend any time creating something new. We found the protomolecule at exactly the right time for it to do the most damage to us, Holden thought. It had looked like a shortcut, a way to avoid having to do any of the work, to just jump straight to godhood. And it had been so long since anything was a real threat to humanity outside of itself that no one was even smart enough to be scared. Dresden had said it himself. The things that made the protomolecule, loaded it into Phoebe, and shot it at the Earth, were already godlike, back when humanity's ancestors thought photosynthesis and the flagellum were cutting edge. But he'd taken their ancient engine of destruction
and turned the key anyway. Because when you got right down to it, humans were still just curious monkeys. They still had to poke everything they found with a stick.